Today's message, as you see, is titled, Should God Bless America? Obviously, we are moving away from our study in the Gospel according to Mark. I have been under strong conviction for quite a few years of the necessity for a message like this, as much as I honestly and sincerely do not relish or get any enjoyment out of having to share it. I wish that I did not have to. But I believe that as a pastor, as someone who tries to follow what the Lord directs me to do through His Word, this message is absolutely essential, especially in our day and time, and in light of the fact that the July 4th holiday is once again just around the corner. I guess before we do anything else, let me mention that I'm going to be basing this sermon, Should God Bless America, on James 4, 7-10. Listen as I read it now from the ESV. Submit yourselves therefore to God, resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Draw near to God, and he will draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners. Purify your hearts, you double-minded. Be wretched and mourn and weep. Let your laughter be turned to mourning and your joy to gloom. Humble yourselves before the Lord. Now notice this last phrase, because this is really the key, and he will exalt you. So we could turn this around and say, how can I be exalted by the Lord? Or how can I be blessed? And then everything that we just read is the explanation for that. We'll come back to this text in a few moments. But let me just say again, as we near the July 4th holiday, and all the pomp and celebration that typically go along with it, I want to do something that not only has been on my mind for many years, but on the mind of other pastors, and in this case, most notably, Dr. John MacArthur. Now, I have significant disagreements with Dr. MacArthur on some key points of theology. However, I do agree with him on some other things that are significant, and what I want to share with you today is one of those things. Not long after the fateful events of September 11, 2001, 9/11, as it's usually referred to, Dr. MacArthur preached a series of sermons that were published as a book. I'm holding it up to you right now. Can God Bless America? As you see, that's the title. So my message and some of the content, I freely acknowledge are coming from this book. And as I pointed out already, the title of the message is The Question No One Is Asking. And that question is directly related to this upcoming holiday and to the song that is so often associated with it, God Bless America. Now, that phrase, God Bless America, and the music associated with it date back to the year 1919 when composer Irving Berlin wrote the song as part of a musical review. I dare say not one of us in this room ever knew that. Now, at the time that he wrote it and that it was publicly sung, it didn't draw a lot of attention. However, Irving Berlin revised and re-released it in the year 1938. Now, what is most interesting is how that song has been used in more recent times. It is of interest because Irving Berlin said that he wrote the revised version of the song as a plea for peace in the face of war. A cry for peace in an era when most Americans were hoping to avert American involvement in yet another foreign war. We had seen the devastation of World War I, and World War II is looming on the horizon, and, you know, maybe you don't realize this, but the people who seem most eager for war, whatever their principles and justification, are usually the people who don't get directly involved in it. They're not the ones going on the front line into the meat grinder. But the song, God Bless America, in spite of America's entry into World War II, retained its popularity. And so, in the minds of most Americans, God Bless America has become a plea that God would bless the American war effort. And so that song's opening line quickly became fixed in the American psyche as both a prayer and a patriotic slogan. And especially following the events of 9/11, God Bless America once again became something of a national anthem. You know, all types of Americans here, lo, these many years later, after 9/11, all types of Americans who go to Major League Baseball games are compelled to stand at the seventh inning and sing the first line of that song. And so people associate blessing with protection, with safety and freedom and prosperity. And so in that sense, all kinds of people are okay with singing God Bless America. Now, I don't know about you, but I recall a rather disturbing thing that indicated to me, at least, as a pastor, that something was not quite right with all of this business going on right after 9/11. And the thing that I recall is that in the days and weeks following 9/11, there were large gatherings of people in public stadiums, like Yankee Stadium, for example, in New York City, where there were government leaders and movie stars, and these rallies were intended to boost our national pride in the wake of these devastating events. One of the largest of these gatherings that I well recall was hosted or emceed by Oprah Winfrey, and it featured prominent religious leaders, all of whom prayed for America. There were mainline Protestant clergymen, rabbis, Muslims, Muslim imams, Buddhist and Hindu priests, New Age gurus. And they all sang God Bless America. And they also sang the John Lennon song, Imagine. Now, if you don't know or you don't remember, former Beatle John Lennon's song is sort of a ballad or a hymn that hopes for and imagines, as the title says, a world without any religion. A world without the hope of heaven and a world without the threat of hell where people live only for today. And the song Imagine pleads for the day when everyone will embrace that kind of, frankly, empty-headed worldview. A worldview that we know is impossible because life is religion. You cannot escape having some kind of religion. You can change religions, but you can't avoid having one. Now, John Lennon apparently imagined that nothing would matter to anyone in the world in a world like that. Therefore, people would finally be able to live in perfect harmony if they didn't have any religion. And I recall something even more recent somewhere, being somewhere, I think we might have been downtown Greenville for the Saturday market, but this John Lennon song, Imagine, was playing. And I think it's a testimony to the profound biblical ignorance of most Americans and their lack of coherent thinking that you find John Lennon's song being played in the same space as God Bless America. And that is because the thoughts expressed in Lennon's song are practically the polar opposite of those expressed in Irving Berlin's song. And so this and all the things that we have seen unfold here in these United States in the days, in the 20 years since 9/11, bring us to the point where we are right now. Many evangelical Christians, American Christians, are going to be eager to sing God Bless America this July 4th. But I want to point out, as Dr. MacArthur wrote years ago, there are questions that no one wants to ask about this if the God of the Bible that we claim to believe is who he says that he is, that we had best ask these questions before we ever sing that song again. And frankly, it is more than just one question. But these two questions that I want to focus on are related. The first is, should God bless America? But then the second is, can God bless America? You see, our society is in the midst of judgment and certainly not blessing. For anyone even slightly familiar with the Bible's message, the various problems and catastrophes that we have seen unfold in our country since 9/11, and really you could date it back even further than that, these are clear signs of cultural breakdown. And the indicators that are that there are worse judgments that are yet to come. Now, at this point, I want to digress for just a few moments. Because I'm not going to presume that everyone here has a clear understanding about how severe these problems are. Oh, we have a general idea about how bad things are in this country. But we like to comfort ourselves that we're not as bad as this other country or whatnot. See, in the eyes of the Lord, that doesn't matter. He's concerned about Christians who keep asking him to bless what's going on in this country. Now, I want to mention this in two phases. I came across something written by a guy by the name, let me pull out his name here, Brad Keena. This is on a website written back in 2012. I don't know who this man is, but I was deeply impressed with what he wrote. He says there are 10 signs that depict or portray the end of a culture, a culture's final days. Great civilizations of the past were destroyed when people saw these signs in their culture but failed to act. And he said each of these indicators are with us today. This is what he wrote in 2012. And he's using the Roman Empire as a typical example of the fall and destruction of a culture. Now, I'm just going to read these 10 things. They each come with a lot of explanation. I'm going to skip over that except in one or two cases. The first sign of the end of a culture is that of a society which no longer worships or acknowledges God. And he means specifically the Christian God. The second indicator of the end of a culture is the decline of the family. Third important indicator of cultural demise is a society's low view of life, as, for example, with abortion. Another sign of the end of civilization is the prevalence of base and immoral and debauched entertainment. Still another troublesome indicator of society's demise is the increase of violent crime, especially among younger people. Another key cultural indicator is the decline of the middle class. And he's talking about here the people who generally hold the economy together. And then another sign of cultural demise is that of a bankrupt government. And related to that, the next sign is a government that lives off of society's moral decay. That's another sign of the end of civilization. And he mentions here specifically as an example, the Roman civilization crumbled under the weight of an immoral and corrupt government. And he says, over the years, our government has devised the creation of whole agencies, government agencies funded by yours and my tax money, that exist for no other reason than to manage some of the most immoral aspects of our culture. Now, he mentions the National Endowment of the Arts and the Legal Services Corporation as examples of that very thing. Moving on, one obvious indicator that the culture is in decline is when those in government lose any sense of morality or moral will. And he says the final indicator of the demise of a civilization is the failure of its people to see what is happening. And I'll close this part of it with this statement that he makes. He says, it is not uncommon in science class for children to be taught that humans evolved from lower life forms and that trees have the same right to life as humans. Children learn that it's okay to have two mommies and no daddy. Kids today are adept at using a calculator, but they have no concept of multiplication or division. They cannot make change but score high in self-esteem. All of the signs of the demise of our culture are with us today. And he says, in the days of Noah, God warned a faithless, immoral, and violent civilization of the imminent catastrophe that was about to take place, but few people listened. 2 weeks before our July 4th celebration, our civilization is at the crossroads, but few are noticing the signs that are right in front of us. Now, for the second part of this stepping away from the sermon part to make sure some information gets out to you, I want to give you some examples, concrete examples of these signs that I just randomly picked up. I'm not even going to give you all of them. I could give you many more. Abortion. Since 1973 to the year 2011, not even up to the present time, nearly 53 million legal abortions have occurred in this country. 53 million babies' lives have been snuffed out. Tucker Carlson, on his Fox News program, nightly program, on June the 14th, just recently, he says, and I quote, current Trump administration immigration and customs enforcement, that's ICE, I-C-E, you know, the border people that we're all supporting. He said, the current Trump administration, ICE, maintains special housing area for transgendered illegal immigrants. They also sponsor, now if that wasn't bad enough, get this, they also sponsor classes to help transgendered men appear more feminine. Our federal government, friends, don't lose sight of this. It doesn't matter if it's Democrat or Republican. This is going on now. Our federal government spends our tax money on classes to teach men who dress like women how to appear more womanlike. And these illegal perverts also get free health care at our expense. Now, I don't know how you could not be aware of it, but the homosexual sodomite lobby and population in this country, as small as it is, has managed to get June declared as Gay Pride Month. And, you know, all over the United States, there are gay pride parades. But these things have been going on since 1970. And there are plenty of these transgendered, transvestite men and homosexuals. And they not only parade and dance around in their debauchery, some of them engage in sexual activity during and around the periphery of these parades. Now, you might think, well, that's just New York City and San Francisco. Oh, no. No, friends. Miami Beach, Boston, Rhode Island, Providence, Rhode Island, Atlanta, Augusta, Houston, Nashville, New Orleans, Jacksonville, Florida, Oklahoma City, Queens, New York, St. Louis, Twin Cities, Minneapolis, St. Paul. Even the Mormon state of Utah has a pride festival. And in 2018, just last year, the small town of Homer, Alaska held its first pride parade. This isn't something you can just simply dismiss as somebody else's problem. Right on, and this is a little different subject, but another thing to be aware of in terms of whether we are being blessed by God or have a right to ask Him to bless us, some of our largest cities, like Los Angeles and San Francisco, have seen a resurgence of medieval diseases like typhus and bubonic plague that have not been seen anywhere for centuries. You think there's some relation? I do. Another thing, getting back to the Pride Month, there were numerous major U.S. embassies around the world who hoisted the rainbow gay pride flag on the U.S. embassy flagpole in these places like Santiago, Chile, New Delhi, India, Seoul, Korea, Vienna, Austria. Pedophilia. People who are inclined to have sex with underage children, this is going to be the next big civil right that you're going to have to accept. I could go in a lot more detail about that, but I'm not going to. Now, we all love the military. You know, we all respect our men and women in the military. I don't know how many of you know who Audie Murphy was. Audie Murphy was a genuine war hero, a young boy who grew up in Texas with virtually nothing. He managed to join the army by falsifying his age. He went to Europe and fought in Italy and Germany. He won the Medal of Honor, the Purple Heart. He single-handedly wiped out, although he was injured and several of his platoon mates were lying dead on the ground, he single-handedly wiped out a German machine gun nest. And they made a movie starring Audie Murphy about this. It's called To Hell and Back, and I would encourage you to see it. I mean, this guy was a genuine article. I'm saying this because today's military, it's not Audie Murphy's military anymore, friends. November 4th, 2017, USA Today. In a first, the Pentagon will pay for an active duty soldier's gender transition surgery. In other words, the military is going to pay for this guy to have surgery to make him into a woman. We all remember the drag queen story hour that occurred here just a few months ago. Some of you may know it was a nationwide effort. Let me read you what it says from the Drag Queen Story Hour website. The Drag Queen Story Hour is just what it sounds like. Drag queens reading stories to children in libraries, schools, and bookstores. It captures the imagination and the play of the gender fluidity of childhood, and it gives kids glamorous, positive, and unabashedly queer role models. In a health survey, August 2nd, 2018, released recently by the RAND Corporation, 6.1% of people in the United States military self-identified as lesbian, gay, or bisexual, or transgendered. Prior to 1962, every state in these United States had laws against sodomy. It was a felony. Sodomy covered a number of different sexual perverted activities. And if tried and convicted, a person would be punished by prison terms or hard labor. All of these laws have been struck down. There are no more sodomy laws on the books of any state in these United States. And by the way, where do you think the states got the idea to prohibit sodomy? They got it from God's law. Same-sex marriage in these United States expanded from one state in 2004 to all 50 states in 2015 through various state court rulings, state legislation, direct popular votes, and federal court rulings. And the last statistic, among the many others I could share with you, is that in 1948, U.S. religious affiliation, 70% of the people surveyed said they were Protestant Christians. 70% in 1948. 2017, 70 years later, that number was down to 38%. One other statistic, in that same survey in 1948, only 2% of the people said they had no religion. Today, 2017, 20% say no religion. So given the moral bankruptcy of modern society, we dare not fail to ask those questions. Are we fit for blessing? Or has our nation forfeited any claim to divine blessing? If God did bless America as we sing that he should, what would he be saying about his own holiness? What would he be saying about our morality? What would he be saying about our spiritual condition? Can God bless America without compromising his reputation as a holy God? Do we understand precisely what we are asking God to bless when we sing that song? Friends, these are seriously necessary questions. Now, of course, God can always do whatever he wants. He's all powerful. He can do it whenever he wants. But when it comes to blessing, he has clearly and repeatedly set down conditions for blessing. Now, you know something? If you read the lyrics of God Bless America, you will see that there is not one word that identifies the conditions for God blessing us, the conditions for divine blessing. And if I was a betting man, I would be willing to bet big money on something. I'd be willing to bet that of the millions of Americans, and I will say specifically Christian Americans, who sing that song or will be singing it in a few weeks, I suspect that virtually not one of them have ever opened the pages of their Bibles to try to find out what are the conditions of God blessing a nation. Have you? Has anyone you know ever asked the Lord God, what do we need to do to be blessed? In fact, to even raise that question as I'm raising it now, it might seem rude. Probably some of you are not happy about the fact that I'm talking about this. Do Americans really want to know the condition that result in God's blessing? Now, the sentiment seems to be, don't tell us what to do. Just bless us, as if God were not supposed to ask anything of us. Most all Americans want some sort of vague blessing without any conditions imposed. So then, today, let us ask the question, these two questions: should God bless America? Can God bless America? And let me speak to the first one right away. I hope that based on what I have shared with you and on your own observations and awareness of the terrible sinful nature of these United States, there is a clear and obvious answer to that first question. Absolutely not. In its current state of evil and rebellion, God should not, and we may safely say he will not, bless America. But now the answer to the second question is more positive. Can God bless America? Can he bless this nation? And the answer is yes, absolutely yes. He certainly will, and will if we take heed to the 10 things that are mentioned as rules or conditions specified in that passage from James chapter 4 that I'm returning to now. When we examine what James says here, it is important to note that he's addressing these words to people who are what we would call nominally Christian. You know, they, if asked, would say, yes, I'm a Christian. Yes, I gather together, I go to church. So let's look at these in order. Now, I've combined some of them, so technically, as I'm calling them out, they're less than 10. But notice the first thing he says, submit to God. The Greek word here used for submit is the same word that was used in other places in the Gospels about Jesus submitting to the will of his parents in terms of not doing certain things. It has military overtones to it, like a soldier submits to orders, but it also, in the fact that it's in the passive voice, it means there's a voluntary submission. You know, most Americans think submitting to God means, oh, I went to church Sunday, so I submitted to God. You know, I found $10, I saw somebody drop $10 in the parking lot, and rather than keep it, I gave it back to the person that dropped it, so I've submitted to God. Now, those are all fine things, but friends, we need to realize submission to God means submission to him totally in all things, including issues of nationhood and government. Personally, we must be submitted to God. In a community, we must be submitted to God. In all areas, we must be submitted to God. And hopefully, what I've shared with you indicates we are not being submissive to God on the highest levels of our culture and government. The second goes right along with that, resist the devil. This is an active thing that we do. Draw near to God. That's just the opposite of resisting the devil. You either got to draw near to the devil or draw near to God. James says you draw near to God. And then he mentions these things, cleanse your hands and purify your hearts. That means to repent. That means to realize the problem is not just over there, it's with us. We have been willing to tolerate all of this evil in our culture. We tacitly give into it. We must be sorrowful. That's why he says, lament, mourn, and weep. These are the signs of genuine sorrow. Not the fact that, say, you got caught doing something wrong and you're sorry for it. No, but you recognize the nature of the sinfulness of yourself, your country, is an affront to God. And he says, be somber and serious. Let your joy turn to gloom. And you know, that and humble yourselves, these last two things, I think, were the most significant things that I noticed right after 9/11 as being totally absent. How many Americans, even Christians, even pastors in pulpits, turned around and said right after 9/11, oh my word, God has brought judgment against us. Let us get on our knees and seek his forgiveness, because this is not a sign of blessing. Just the opposite. People were waving their flags. They were puffing their chests out. These colors don't run. All of this prideful, boasting stuff. James looks at this and says, why all the raised glasses and salutes and toasts? Why all the flag waving? Why are you not mourning and weeping about the sign of God's absolute judgment? Humble yourselves, he says. You know, in the book of Daniel that we studied, we saw a similar thing where, you know, the Israelites had been carried off into captivity. And here is Daniel, God's prophet, and he's telling them, you haven't learned anything. You've been, your country has been destroyed. You've been packed up and hauled off to a foreign land where you're among pagans. God's judgment is in front of you, and you're still not getting the message. Can God bless America? Yes. But if we are to be the recipients of his blessing, we must be humble and repentant over ours and our nation's sins. God resists those who revel in pride and arrogance. He exalts those who humble themselves. And I'm going to quote Dr. MacArthur here directly in closing this message. He said, calamities such as those that have struck our nation are harbingers of greater judgments to come. Or, he says, they could be a prelude to divine blessing. And then he gives us this final note. The difference of whether it's judgment or blessing will be seen in how we respond to these things. May God, by his grace, give us the courage and the Holy Spirit power to respond according to his standards, as we read in James 4. Amen.